You know Rich Lowry, editor of National Review, who I believe now surpasses the combined media time of both Lanny Davis and James Carville. And a good thing it is. While the news was on, we don't have Lowry on the phone yet. All right. Well, there's no point in me giving a big introduction then. Thought he was ready to join the program here.
Still making telephonic communications at this point.
Yes.
But
all right. Rich Lowry is joining us now. Mr. Lowry, even as we speak, I'm perusing your column today in the New York Post, on the opinion page of the New York Post, and I'm going to impose upon you an impossible duty. I'm going to ask you to do something, a task that, as the late movie producer Samuel Goldwyn would say, in two words, impossible. You got a column about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. The news these days, as you know, is full of stories about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the business news replete with mentions of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And I dread it when those stories come up because I have a deep-seated belief that most Americans have no idea what the hell we're talking about when we discuss these institutions. Can you give us a cram course on Fannie Mae, but her sister may not, and Freddie Mac, what they are, and what is the problem with them? Can you do that?
I will try. Are you ready? Do we have a drum roll? Can we get some drum rolls?
Yeah.
They're so-called government-sponsored enterprises, and I know just saying that phrase probably has most people turning the dial. So any downtick on the ratings, you can blame on me or on Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
You got to make it exciting.
Quasi-public, quasi-private mortgage companies, more or less, and their role is to buy mortgages that banks and lenders have given to folks, buy them up and sell them on the secondary market, securitize them and sell them on the secondary market and guarantee them. And this is supposed to bolster the mortgage market and make the American dream more accessible to ordinary people. And there's always been an implicit guarantee that if any problem pops up with Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, the federal government will be there to backstop them. Now, the shareholders and executives of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have used that implicit guarantee to backstop all sorts of other activities not necessarily related to their original mission, and they've grown their portfolios, they've taken on various financial risks that no other companies would take on because they have that federal guarantee. All sorts of people from Alan Greenspan to various Republicans in Congress to the Wall Street Journal editorial page have warned that these institutions are out of control, they're taking too much risk, they're a scandal and a problem waiting to happen. And finally, that's come true, and Congress ignored it because these outfits have enormous lobbying operations. They have huge ties to people on both sides of the aisles, but especially Democrats, and they're a bit of a political cash cow. So I think it's a scandal, and as soon as we get out of this immediate crisis, the thing should be dissolved, basically.
Do you smell other bank failures coming? I'll tell you why I mention it.
Sure.
The place where I do most, not all, but most of my banking has been mentioned prominently lately as one of the major banks that could be in trouble. I didn't want to wait for anything to happen. I took my money out. Okay, I know that is an action that kind of pushes panic. But it's not my responsibility to make some damn crooked or incompetent banker feel good.
You know, I'm not a financial guy, and it took me a while to get up enough on Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to be able to write just 650 words on it for my column. So I'm the wrong guy to ask. All I know is, you know, I've seen the pictures and the headlines about Indy Mac and some of these other institutions, and it's pretty scary. And it's weird to me that you have, you know, a near financial meltdown occurring, and neither political candidate seems particularly seized of the matter. It's kind of bizarre. Both of these guys, John McCain and Barack Obama, they basically just don't do, you know, you don't do windows. They don't do economics, which just seems very strange when that's going to be the number one issue in this election.
Now, I know it is the job of presidents to try to reassure people in times of financial crisis to keep a bad situation from getting worse. I don't care. I'm not interested in what kind of a PR job this president or any president is doing, saying, oh, don't worry, the financial institutions are sound, to hell with it. And I'll give you a reason why, from personal family history. It's legendary in my family that in the Great Depression, my grandfather watched this small town, virtually rural bank, collapse. And he went to the bank, like a lot of other people, and said to the banker, give me my money. And the banker said, I can't. And my grandfather said, okay, and went home and came back the next day with a shotgun and said to the bank president, now give me my money. And the bank president decided he could. It was amazing how that worked. But that's part of family lore in my family. I'm not recommending that to anybody, of course.
Well, it is a strange sort of economy, just because, you know, the housing market, were, you know, in a huge recession. Obviously, the financial system's in turmoil, but there are a lot of areas of strength, you know, as well. Exports are going really well, and we haven't actually, you know, I think Phil Graham's comments were maladroit, to say the least, but we haven't technically dipped into recession territory. And I was talking to someone yesterday, a financial expert, who kind of thinks we never will. You know, we'll keep on growing, just, you know, at an anemic pace for a while.
Yeah. Of course, we might slip into Carter-style stagflation, but that may depend on the outcome of the election. I asked this of another guest recently on this program, somebody presumably wise in the ways of politics, as are you. So I would like to ask you, have you heard in this presidential campaign, have you heard one single thing that's truly new? I mean, change the names, and it seems to me this could be a replay of other presidential campaigns we've seen before. What do you think?
Something new. What's been new? Well, have we ever heard a presidential candidate basically pledge to turn back the tides and lower sea levels the way Barack Obama? I think Obama's messianism, certainly in recent American politics, is something new. I don't think there's been much new out of the McCain campaign. And you know, they're going after Obama and kind of the same way Bush went after Kerry on the flip-flops. I think that's a little tired. I mean, there's a lot of truth to it. It's a little tired, and they can't – McCain, they've wanted to paint Obama as just a typical politician. You know, to bring him off his pedestal a little bit. But making him a typical politician isn't enough. If he's just a typical politician and an everyday Democrat, he's going to win, you know, just because the environment's so bad for Republicans. You look at party ID, you know, they're the fewest number of people identifying themselves as a Republican since Watergate, basically. So an average Democrat is going to win. They have to make the case that Barack Obama is too risky to be president of the United States, that his flip-flop speaks not just to an ordinary opportunism, but a deep dishonesty and an immaturity and a duplicity. They really have to be going after him hammer and tongs every single day.
And McCain won't do it.
He won the nomination. The RNC should have been up with that. And I've just written a piece with a colleague about a strategy, suggesting a strategy for McCain, and we think he should borrow a page from Hillary Clinton. But if you look at one of Hillary's key mistakes, it wasn't going after Obama hard enough, early enough.
And McCain will not do it. He wants to be a gentleman, an officer and a gentleman. That's the problem right there. But if you were advising the McCain campaign right now, today, and you ought to be, by the way, somebody should be, what issues would you tell him to really hit hard, and which things to just shut up about?
Well, one, it's just a matter of his sensibility, McCain's sensibility, which you hit on. You know, at the NAACP, you know, he went out of his way to praise Obama, which is fine. You know, there's a place for graciousness in our politics, obviously. What bothers me is that's obviously what McCain is most comfortable with. And if his campaign doesn't force him out of his comfort zone, there's no way they can win. But I think they have to do a couple things. They obviously have to hit on the inexperience, and they've done some of that. They have to hit him hard on the foreign policy. They've done some of that, but they need to go even harder. And then he needs to develop a compelling economic message. And McCain, naturally, he wants the race to be about honor, you know, his honor above all, and about foreign policy, because that's his comfort zone. But the economy is going to be the number one issue, and unless he taps into that kind of message that Hillary had, appealing to working-class voters, to whites and Hispanics without a college degree, he's not going to win. And that's where he really needs work. And I think the basic message, he can massage it one way or the other, has to be, you know, I'm a fighter for us. He's got to recapture some of that mojo he had in 2000. I wasn't a McCain fan even back then, when a lot of people were so taken with him. But he really expressed the bitterness and anger and frustration with Washington back then. Somehow, 8 years later, when that message would really work and would really succeed for him, it didn't work so well in the Republican primaries at the end of the day, he doesn't have it anymore. That's what I think he needs to recapture.
What was your reaction when, a few days ago, when he made it a point to discuss his ignorance of computers?
Oh, my gosh. It's just shocking. It's shocking. And it's inexcusable. They should realize just how out of touch that makes him seem. And not just seem. I mean, this is a huge part of contemporary American life that he's cut off from. And someone, you know, 6 months ago, a year ago, she said, look, Senator, this is what you do. You click on the Internet Explorer icon twice, you know, and then you're on the Internet. To have him at this juncture, you know, saying he doesn't know how to use the Internet and he'll get lessons, you know, on how to do it going forward is really pathetic. And, you know, one of the big thematic challenges for McCain, there are two. One, Obama represents change, and he needs to take that change mantle away from him and define the kind of change Obama would be, a change we can't afford. But the other is future versus the past. And there's nothing that says past like a guy, you know, in his 70s who doesn't know how to use the Internet.
I just absolutely cringed. He's advertising, I am totally out of touch with the real world. It sounds like just a glaring symptom of OFD.
Which
old fellow's disease. It just, Now, a few days ago, I'm grasping at straws here, but a few days ago when Barack Obama ostensibly was trying to persuade a room full of his big money supporters to help Hillary's campaign debt, and he almost forgot to mention it right till the very end because the speech was all about him. But could you, in your most Machiavellian mindset, and I'm sure you have one somewhere, conceive of some way, any way, Hillary might still try to get revenge on him?
Yeah. I mean, they're rooting Bill and Hillary, and everyone was talking about yesterday, Bill, you know, coming out and saying he's going to campaign for Obama, which was inevitable. I got to believe they're secretly rooting for him to lose. I don't think there's much they can actively do. I think it's just more a passive resistance. They'll do the minimal they can. The minimum they can to help Obama, but I'm not sure what they can do to actively sabotage him. But that's probably because of lack of imagination on my part.
Well, you're not a Clinton, so yeah. It may be too much to ask. You said in your column in National Review the other day that the Democrats have apparently decided that facts don't matter anymore when it comes to Iraq. Would you say the same of their view of the oil situation? I mean, over and over from Democrats, we hear this silly line about, we can't drill our way out of this.
Yeah. No, I think that's absolutely right, and it's beginning to hurt them, and this is another big opportunity for McCain. If McCain didn't have, you know, big contradiction within his own position, which is opposing drilling up in Anwar, and were really seized of this matter and driving it, Obama would have flip-flopped by now. I mean, this is a big loser for the Democrats. There's a memo out. I haven't seen it yet. I've just seen references to it by Stan Greenberg and James Carville, the Democratic pollster and strategist, of course. And they say that's, you know, the big vulnerability on the horizon for Democrats, because they really, you know, are saying no to everything. This is another area where they're detached from reality and really can't be honest, because they think the price of gas in their ideal world will be this high or higher, because they want to drive people out of cars. They want to, they think cars are despoiling the planet. but they can't be honest about that. So instead, they kind of stand in the way of any solution that would bring down the price of oil while complaining about oil executives.
The Republicans can and do justifiably complain about Barack Obama being an elitist. Let's be honest about it. John McCain's an elitist, raised in a family of Navy admirals, cushioned against the vicissitudes of everyday economic life by that fact.
Yeah.
He has no more in common with the average working American than does Prince Charles of England.
Yeah, you know, he said as much a month or so ago. He was when he started his that he did that tour, kind of introducing himself to the American people after he won the nomination. And he had some meeting with workers somewhere, and he basically said, you know, I'm not one of you. I've never had to work and struggle the way you do, but we're all Americans, and that's the bond that's most meaningful and is deepest to me. And it was quite a moving line. But it was also really honest. And I think you're right about both Obama and McCain. They're both, in their own ways, members of a cloistered elite. Obama, one that, you know, he graduated into through, you know, going to those Ivy League schools and moving those sort of circles. John McCain was born into it. I prefer John McCain's elite. You know, I think it's much more honorable and more committed to self-sacrificing service to the country. But this is why, going back to the point I was making earlier, that they both don't really speak persuasively to economic concerns because they're kind of detached from them.
Both McCain and Obama have spent much of the last couple of weeks pandering for the Latino vote, sucking up on illegal immigration largely. Do you understand why John McCain is wasting his time on a lost cause like that? He's not going to get the majority of the Latino vote. He infuriates all over again the conservative base by doing it. What can he possibly be thinking?
Yeah. Well, I probably disagree with you on this one a little bit, just because I think the Southwest is so important. If he loses New Mexico, Colorado, and Nevada, you know, it's basically all over. So he wants to limit the damage among Latinos. But it's been very distressing for those of us who take enforcement seriously and think it has to happen first, where McCain during the primary has more or less, you know, said he's one of us, he got the message, he was going to do enforcement first. And now it's just day to day. Some days he says it correctly, that he's going to do enforcement before the comprehensive bill. Other days, he kind of mixes it up and says, no, it's going to all be part of the same bill, or strongly suggests that, which means what he was saying in the primary was kind of his boob bait for Bubba. So I think there's no doubt when it comes to immigration, if McCain's elected, we're going to have to fight him, and we're going to have to fight to have it be two separate initiatives, enforcement come first. We're going to have to fight for the enforcement to be real, and then when it comes time for the second half, if he ever gets there, you know, the amnesty, we're going to have to fight him over that. So I just think as conservatives, we shouldn't have any illusions here. But I think as Republicans, though, we need to be playing for the Hispanic vote. We need to be telling those voters we want them to be part of the American dream. We want them to assimilate. We want them to become middle class and fully integrated into the country. And there's no symbol for full integration into the country quite like voting Republican. And we want to improve their lives and make them Republicans. But the first step is stopping this huge flow of illegals. Because, you know, the people it hurts most, no illegals are really competing for our jobs. They're competing for the kind of jobs that the recent Mexican Americans have, you know, these lower wage jobs. So it's not good for them to have this huge flow of illegals. I think we need to carry that message to Hispanics, whether it makes a huge difference now or not. I just think it needs to be something we're saying. We just can't pretend these people don't exist.
I have a number of friends and acquaintances who are Mexican-American, and there's nobody more furious over the idea of giving amnesty to illegals than people who went through the long, slow process of doing it right and legally. Yeah. They are absolutely furious, and they wonder, what the hell is John McCain doing?
Yeah.
That, another aspect of this campaign, I find very puzzling. I've been through a few of these things, as have you. We have McCain spending campaign time, campaign in which he is trailing in every poll, campaign time spent down in Colombia and Mexico, and Obama's running off to make a speech in Germany. Yeah. Which country's presidency do you think these guys are running for?
Yeah, I think McCain was you know, basically wasting his time going to Canada and Colombia and Mexico. But I knew the point he was trying to make, which is that, you know, Obama talks about wanting to improve relations with our allies, and then here are these actual allies we have, our NAFTA partners in Colombia, with whom we want to forge a free trade agreement, and he wants to stiff them. And I have a real soft spot for Colombia because that President Uribe down there, who's beaten the heck out of FARC, this heinous terrorist group, is really the most impressive leader, bar none.
Yeah, I wish he were running for our presidency.
Absolutely. I mean, he's smart as they come. He has a populist touch, and he has a spine of steel. So he's really, really impressive. But this Obama thing, you know, wanting to give this speech at the Brandenburg Gate, he's got to be careful because it's a real double-edged sword. Because Americans want to be liked. They want to be liked abroad. I think, unfortunately, they buy the idea that Bush is, you know, heedlessly alienated the rest of the world. So they want to be liked again. So they want a president that's going to be popular overseas. But on the other hand, they don't want Europeans choosing our president for us effectively, you know. And so Obama's got to be really careful because he's on a tightrope.
We'll be right back for a final word with Rich Lowry, editor of National Review, after a brief break on Hot Talk 560 KSFO. OV, what's going on the roads and bridges?
It's Hayward 880 southbound at 92 Jackson, multi-vehicle accident there. San Francisco Park, Presidio Boulevard, both directions at Fulton Street, an accident. And Hayward West, Winton Avenue westbound after 880, an accident there. The Land Rover LR3, 6 decades of unmatched all-terrain capability brings you this. Drive the vehicle that's a must-have for explorers and humanitarians around the world. Visit bayarea.landrover.com. Also, when state officials call a flex alert, that's your signal to start saving energy immediately. For tips and updates, visit flexyourpower.org. Officer Vic, Hot Talk 560. KSFO.
You're listening to Lee Rogers on Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
With Rich Lowry, the editor of National Review, Barack Obama is going to be off to Iraq pretty soon. He apparently approved of that Iraqi prime minister saying a few days ago that he will tell us when we have to get out of Iraq. I may be overreacting here. I tend to do that from time to time. But try a flashback to 1945, Mr. Lowry. Can you imagine some Japanese politician presuming to tell General Douglas MacArthur when he and his troops had to leave Japan?
No, that's a good point. But this is a key thing. Don't fall for the spin on that Maliki statement. It's not something he actually said. It was something edited into the transcript by his aides of something he said, and it was just a kind of covering his flank in Iraqi politics. We are a foreign occupying army. They are a sovereign country. Eventually, they want us gone. But Maliki doesn't really support any real timetable. Everyone in the Iraqi government knows we're essential to their success. And getting out in 60 months the way Obama's talking about would be a disaster. So that was really Obama is making opportunistic and dishonest use of that Maliki statement. What I'd like to ask Obama, so what withdrawal date does Maliki support? Because he hasn't. He hasn't said any, and he won't because he knows the idea is ridiculous. So this is Maliki playing Iraqi domestic politics. Everything he says can't be taken, you know, as seriously as other things, just like, you know, the way both Obama and McCain will say things just for political purposes here and not really mean them.
Hard to believe, isn't it? Rich Lowry, nationalreview.com. Thank you, sir. Always a treat to have you on the program. Thanks a lot.
For a vacation next week, so I need someone on your show offline to give me some restaurant recommendations.
You're going to be here?
Yes, I am.
Oh.
Well, then you should
Larry,
be here.
Larry, put him on hold. Larry, put him on hold and give him some restaurant recommendations. places where they don't spit in the soup, preferably. It's Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
Jeez.
8:35, and Big Buck joins us from the Wall Street Journal.
Yuck. All right. Wall Street mixed, still mixed. The Dow up 39 points at 11,485. NASDAQ down 23.5 at the S&P 500, just about flat. The blue chips have been bouncing around after a two-day rally, with Citigroup reporting smaller-than-expected losses, and Merrill Lynch, Google, and Microsoft all posting earnings results that left investors disappointed, hence the negative four of the NASDAQ, for example. Meanwhile, oil reversed direction after 3 days of weakness, now up 75 cents at $130.07 a barrel. The yield on the 10-year Treasury note at 4.073%. Warner Brothers will release an online Batman series in conjunction with the film The Dark Knight. A hybrid of comic books and animation that the studio calls motion comics. Now, I think this Batman's a bit more hardcore there.
Margin, Buck, that's right.
Once again, the Dow up 37, NASDAQ down 24, and the S&P 500 up a little more than a half. I'm Buck McQuillan at the Wall Street Journal on Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
You're listening to Lee Rogers on Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
Road to the White House. I'm Jim Hickey.
We have succeeded in Iraq.
John McCain nailing down his position on Iraq.
We will win the war.
As Barack Obama heads overseas to shore up his foreign policy credentials.
The stakes are high for Obama as he prepares for his world tour.
ABC's Jake Tapper.
A recent ABC News poll shows 72% of Americans, even most Democrats, say McCain would be a good commander-in-chief of the military. Fewer than half, 48%, say that about Obama.
McCain is trying to make the most of that, saying, in effect, it is about time Obama focused on the war.
He needs to see conditions on the ground. He's never asked for a sit-down briefing with General Petraeus. A remarkable thing. A remarkable thing.
With stops expected in Iraq, Afghanistan, the Middle East, and Europe, political analyst Tad Devine says Obama must be very careful.
On a trip like this, on a stage like this, there's no room for error.
On the road to the White House, I'm Jim Hickey, ABC News.
President Bush might have been the target of an assassination plot in Jerusalem.
The cell was still in the planning stages, and security officials told ABC News they found no bomb-making material, but added they arrested the men before they could, quote, do something. Its members, two of which are university students, met in the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem. One of them, a chemistry student, whose dorm room overlooks the helipad used by the president, even filmed Marine One landing. He posted the footage on an Al-Qaeda website, asking how to shoot it down. Matt Cutman, ABC News, Jerusalem.
There was very little order in the courtroom in Sedgwick County, Kansas, as the defendant had some, contemptible words for the judge and the prosecutor.
Do you really think it's appropriate to cuss here in court?
Things were not going well in the Kansas courtroom of Judge Rebecca Pilshaw. Inmate Michael Gaines, who is HIV positive, was accused of spitting in the faces of two deputies. He took exception to the judge.
You ain't got to scream at me.
Your Honor, were words he did not use.
Oh, my God.
You raised your voice to me, I raised my voice to you.
He had thoughts about the DA, too.
He's a maggot, punk.
As deputies led Gaines out of the courtroom, Judge Pilshaw had a final thought and sentenced Gaines to 13 more years in prison. Jim Hickey, ABC News.
I think the odds are against you when you go into a fight like that.
Yeah, calling doing the judge a maggot.
No, that's not going to work.
Next time you're crammed into an economy seat on an airline, think about what the Air Force wants to provide for its senior officers and civilian leaders who use Air Force planes. Washington Post says this program has been scaled down in the face of congressional criticism. ABC's Pam Coulter has more.
Congress knocked back Air Force plans to spend $16 million in counterterrorism funds for the comfort capsules intended for use by top brass and civilian leaders. The 18-by-9-foot capsules include beds, a couch, a table, and a 37-inch flat-screen TV with stereo speakers. The program has been scaled back from 10 capsules to 3, and will be paid for with General Air Force funds.
I want to be an Air Force general. Theoretically, if you're a woman in Hollywood over the age of 30, your days as a leading lady are numbered. Well, try telling that to the voters for the Emmy Awards.
There's one number that really stands out from this year's Emmy nominations, 51.6. That is the average age of the women in the Best Actress in a Drama category.
I think she's going to have a brilliant future.
That's Oscar winner Glenn Close in Damages. She's 61. And so is Oscar winner Sally Field, last year's winner for Brothers and Sisters.
Thank you for coming. The dinner is over.
Holly Hunter, another Oscar winner, gets the nod for Saving Grace. She's 50. Mariska Hargitay of Law & Order SVU is 44. And the baby of the category, Kira Sedgwick of The Closer, she's 42. David Blaustein, ABC News.
Now from the Department of Utterly Useless Information, we have this. Where are the best cities for walking?
Let's face it, in most American cities, the car is king. But there are walkable cities and even pockets of walkable neighborhoods. A Seattle software company analyzed more than 2,500 neighborhoods in 40 cities. The 10 most walkable, San Francisco, followed by New York, Boston, Chicago, Philadelphia, Seattle, Washington, D.C., Long Beach, Portland, Oregon, even parts of Los Angeles. It's all based on proximity of stores, restaurants, coffee shops, and other amenities. Lisa Stark, ABC News, Washington.
I tell you what you do. You want to find out what a great walking city San Francisco is. Try walking up Telegraph Hill.
Yeah, let's give that a try. And maybe you and I later will walk over to the Cliff House for lunch.
Yeah.
That'll be a good... That's easy.
It's just quick knuckle bump, OV. Knuckle bump.
Yeah.
Yeah. We got to get into that. We got to learn to do that gracefully because that's going to be part of the culture in the Obama administration. No more shaking hands. None of that stuff.
Right.
Just knuckle bumps.
Doink.
Mm-hmm. Are you feeling burned out? Oh, God, yes.
What are you, nuts?
Well, you got plenty of company if you are. ABC's Daria Albinger checked out a new study on work, life, and the sometimes uneasy balance between the two.
If the job grind's wearing you down, get in line. You are certainly not alone. Over three-quarters of respondents to a survey by CareerBuilder.com say they're burned out. Almost half say their workload's increased over the last 6 months. Almost as many say their current workload is too heavy. And nearly a quarter are dissatisfied with their work-life balance. The boss is listening, though. Over half of managers CareerBuilder talked to say their companies offer some kind of flex time. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
I gets weary.
And sick of trying.
Tired of living.
But
scared of dying. The old man's liver.
No.
There were some high bids at a New York auction of possessions of soul singer James Brown.
Sold. The James Brown items went for thousands of dollars on the auction block.
Wow!
Band leader Paul Schaefer bid $32,500 to win a medical bracelet. Schaefer bid $10,000 for a Hammond organ. There was another bidder who offered $40,000 for a red leather sofa, love seat, and armchair. James Brown, the godfather of soul, died of heart failure on Christmas Day 2006 at age 73. There was conflict over his estate, with family members trying to block the auction. Dave Schreiber, ABC News, New York.
All right, amateur ornithologist, that includes you, Ms. Wanda. Did you know that a sparrow that lives in the South may sound markedly different from the very same species of sparrow that lives in the North? Studies reported in the Raleigh News and Observer finds regional differences in birdsong are as pronounced as they are in human beings.
People,
well, hello everyone.
As we know,
hello.
All have
yes, hello.
Different accents.
What's up, y'all?
Well, apparently... So do birds. They sing with different, well, dialects in different parts of the country, at least according to research out of Duke University. Some scientists believe birds learn to mimic sounds around them, just like we do.
The bird does impressions.
As the late Johnny Carson learned, talking to a minor bird on his TV show years ago.
How do you call the kitty?
Kitty, 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 kitty.
Jim Hickey, ABC News.
How much? Is that doggy in the window?
Well, what a nice-looking guy here. Do we pronounce his name Gilbert or give it the French touch and call him Gilbert, Ms. Wanda? Which you prefer?
Did you want to say something, Ovi?
No.
Oh, okay. I call him Gilbert, but you can call him Gil, too. You know, he's definitely Gilbert. And he is a nice, nice boy. He's about 6 years old-ish. And I think he's somehow I made a note that he was 23 pounds, but that's wrong. He's probably at least 33 pounds.
He's at least 33, yeah.
Yeah, he's not 23 pounds. He is a bigger boy than that. And he's a red boxer mix. And he's probably got boxer with some lab in him. So his face is very boxer-like with a little bit of the turned-up nose and a shorter muzzle.
He's a middleweight.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But what a sweetheart. He's new to the city. He's from Monterey originally. But he doesn't mind the busyness or the craziness of the city at all. So he's got a very nice confidence, but super duper sweet. He's just a doll. I adore him.
And you can hear him.
Look, he's roly-poly on the floor over there.
He's doing it on cue because he was just standing here before we went on mic. He was just kind of like, okay, am I on yet?
Yeah.
And now he's performing.
That's right. And you know what? He's quite the gentleman because he does know to sit and he can shake with both paws. That's quite talented there. He does a down stay. Mm-hmm. Yes. So he's quite educated already. But I still think he'd like to get into some more training classes because he seems to enjoy the training and the treats. And also,
roll over, Gilbert. Roll over.
Lee just did. Did you see him, Lee? Did you see him?
Yeah.
I don't think you want a boxer to roll over. Well, I mean, unless you bribe him.
But now he's. And one more thing about Gilbert. Stop it. This is Gilbert the dog we're speaking about. He's very sweet with other dogs, and he's a little vocal. When he sees dogs, even in the from the car, he saw dogs along the Embarcadero. And he's like, hello, hello. So he's. Yeah, he did
I
that.
I love the way you do that.
We have to isolate that and use that later.
No, you don't. But anyway, everybody, you've got to meet Gilbert. He's a sweet, sweet boy. He's just an all-around good dog. And you can call him Gil again. You can call him Gil. But you can meet him when you go you can go to the KSFO website at www.ksfo.com. Find that puppy love page and let me introduce you. There's Gilbert right up top. Come meet him in person, San Francisco SPCA 2500 16th Street. Call us. The music's going 415-554-3000.
You're listening to Lee Rogers on Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
Mamma Mia, the hit Broadway musical featuring the songs of ABBA. Who would have believed that would ever work? It's now a Moon Picture Show starring Meryl Streep. Any good?
In Mamma Mia, Meryl Streep plays Donna. She's throwing a wedding for her daughter, Sophie. Sophie wants to be given away by her dad. The problem is she has three possible dads because one summer, her mom had a little too much fun. Sophie invites her three possible dads to the wedding, and Donna has a tough time dealing. Pierce Brosnan, who clearly doesn't like to sing, almost ruins Mamma Mia. But when all is said and done, combine Meryl Streep with the Greek Island backdrop, and it's okay to take a chance on Mamma Mia.
Take a chance on me.
3 out of 5 stars. David Blaustein, ABC News.
Thanks. I believe I'll pass. Also in the showbiz news, this is vital stuff. Kim Kardashian wants it known that rumors to the contrary notwithstanding, she has not had a butt lift. I trust that makes everybody feel better.
Woo!
Thank God. Three people to lift it anyway. Birthday is today. When he drops by your house today, and I'm sure he will, say happy birthday to this dude right here.
I keep away from a run around sewer. Whoa!
Yeah, you got Dion DiMucci right there. And I think he's
Dion and the Belmonts.
Yeah, so 72.
70, let me see. 69.
Oh,
today.
Wow. Yeah. Good deal.
His age and his hobby.
No, stop.
Have a splendid
You're going to have to
weekend.
Leave now.
We'll meet you back
You're
here
in detention.
Next week.